Well, good morning. I hope you've been enjoying our Time Tree Conference day. My name is Amy Burns, and I'm the president-elect of Time. If you don't know about us, but you probably do know about us, because I think you had new members to get in here. So, but if you joined us just to come, please come find any of us who are Time members and talk to you about the benefits of Time. You didn't waste your money coming here today. That was money well spent. Or it was by your district. It was money well spent by your district. Today, this is one of the best of our presenters. This is Dr. Joe, and I'm going to say this right, Pisano. Excellent. And if you don't know Joe, then you need to check out his blog, musetech.net. If you have never heard of that, you need to go there, because his Monday morning coffees of all, he checks out all these music ed blogs, and you can just go and check and get all of his feedback from other blogs. It's amazing. The 100 music education blogs that would happen during 2009.
Yeah.
He has a list of 100 music education blogs, and they're amazing. He is the Associate Professor of Music and Music Technology and the Associate Chair of Music and Fine Arts at Grove City College in Grove City, Pennsylvania. He's an active instrumental conductor, jazz trumpet player, music education advocate, and the founder and chief editor of a very popular music education and technology website, musetech.net. You're going to learn a lot today. His handout is thorough, which is always, always appreciative. So if you don't have a handout, I'll get it to you in the back. Yep, excellent. Let's welcome Dr. Joe Pisano.
Thank you. Well, that's it. You get the handout. Thanks for coming. Very glad to be here today. Like many of you, trying to get to a conference, I live just north of Pittsburgh, and trying to get everything done and get here was a real accomplishment. I got here almost 1 o'clock last night, and I had an 8 o'clock presentation this morning, which I was almost prepared for, so I had to be up a little bit. But this particular presentation, I've been working on it for years, literally, and putting it together for the last 2 weeks, and I was sharing with Rick over there that every time I go through it, I think I need to add something. I'm trying to make this kind of a cookie cutter solution, and then trying to make it easy, and then a little bit harder, and so forth. But just bear with me through here. I think you're going to learn an awful lot about two-track recorders, like the H4N that I have up over here, and I'll talk about that in a second. And then, how can we, as ensemble directors, either instrumental or vocal or whatever it may be, how can we leverage these new incredible devices to use, either for putting out commercially in a sense, or just as good quality recordings to use for rehearsal or to use for analysis. And so my presentation focuses on a low-cost cookie-cutter solution to recording using handheld devices. Now, what I propose up here, and what's interestingly enough, there's enough places here you can actually buy some of these things right at the conference. So if you're looking at these, feel free to look at mine later. But I recommend, if you're going to do this, getting one of these high-quality digital handheld recorders. I have some listed up here, the Zoom H4N, the Zoom H2, and some other ones up here. Maybe you have them, maybe you have seen them. But they're under $400. Some can be had for under $200 up here. One of the incredible conveniences of these devices is to just set up that right there. So I'm going to record this session, and I'll put it up on my site and authorstream.com. It's all in the handout there, and you'll be able to access this. So this is being recorded very simply by a really cool microphone stand. It's on the next slide, called a New Era. These are really hard to find, but they're made by Hamilton. This is basically a folding music stand, but they've adapted it to put a mic head on top. It's under $20, so it folds up in this little tiny bag. I carry it along with me. I can record for up to 11 hours on two batteries on these little handheld recording devices, and I don't have to carry a bag of gear or a truck of gear or spend a whole lot of time setting things up to get a good recording. Now, the other part of this is to use a good digital editor to make your recordings a little bit better, or a lot better in some cases. And so for this, we're going to use Audacity. I'm sure that some of you are familiar with Audacity, some of you are not, but it's a free open source product that is cross-platform. You can get it for most of the Windows varieties, Mac OS X, and yes, OS 9 is still supported on here, or Linux. Then, if you plan to make CDs, it's interesting, for years, If you went to the time sessions, there was basically the CD creation. It's actually still needed. But we've kind of moved away from that recently. And so, yes, we still make CDs, still viable. You can go, you can still buy CDs, but we've kind of moved to a digital direction with this type of stuff. So any CD burning software, and a little bit later on, I talk about some burning software that you can get. Now, what you see on the screen here is in your handout. So I put the presentations. Each of the PowerPoints are in there. This is a slightly updated version of what you had in there. I had to get that printed out last Friday. I noticed at least two typos in that I have since corrected. You may see another one up here. And there's a couple extra slides that aren't in there, but you'll be able to get this entire presentation online probably next week.
Do you have any more?
I do. I made 50. There you go. Okay, so what am I using? The Zoom Handy Recorder H4N. I wrote an excellent, in my mind, since I wrote it, article about the Zoom H4N for the Sound Waves publication from Soundtree. If you're looking for an in-depth review of that, you can go online to soundtree.com and get it. I am enthralled with the Zoom H4N. I love the Zoom H4. I love the Zoom H2. I love some of the Tascam products, but I am particularly enthralled with this recorder because of the quality of the stereo miking pair, and I don't really talk about this in here, but I'll give you a little bit more information. It has external inputs that you can put in that are XLR. Now, you're thinking, okay, well, XLR, this is a good quality connection. Maybe you don't know what XLR is, but it's a good connection. One of the things that make the H4N particularly useful for me as far as audio quality is the quality of the preamps. Now, that may be a little bit out there for you guys, but a preamp, if you get a bad preamp when you record with external microphones, it doesn't matter if you have a $1,000 microphone. You're going to hear a little bit of noise. You're going to hear a little bit of crunch. The H4N, this device right here, there's none of that. So if I plug in external mics on this, I get great quality. In addition to using the two front mics on this, I can add two mics to it through these other inputs, and I can use four microphones to record a larger ensemble. Another extremely cool thing about the H4N is the microphones, you can rotate them. So if I have a small ensemble, I can have a very small dispersion recording. Okay, I can pick up a small group. If I have a larger ensemble, I can rotate them and pick up a much wider pattern. So that allows me to kind of control the noise or things that I don't want to record. So enough about the H4N. I really like it and I highly recommend it. I'm using Audacity version 1.3.1.1. It's a beta version. The beta versions on the Audacity SourceForge site typically have a little bit more features, but if you have Windows 7, you have to use the beta version. So just a little note there. Okay, with that, I use Microsoft Windows 7, and I have this really cool New Era stand. It's very compact, and you can take it with you, and you don't have to cart around a big, heavy stand. Okay, so why in the world of all this crazy technology do we use two tracks, or should we use two tracks? I have a couple reasons up here. The first reason is you get kind of real-world sound. You get a good idea of what the audience is hearing because a stereo recording device mimics how the ears are. Whatever sound is coming at it, that's what it picks up. Consequently, as an ensemble director, then you become the mixer. Right? Something's a little too loud, you have to get that ensemble blend right off the bat because it's going to pick it. If you have a clarinet player, I'm picking on clarinet players, and they're sticking out, well, guess what? They're going to stick out in the recording. Now, later on, you can do some things to correct that, and I'll show you that a little bit later on. Less equipment. As a band director, I do not have the time, the effort, nor the inclination to carry around the gear that I used to carry around 15 years ago. Right, big truckloads and crates and mics and wires. These do a great job, and guess what? It's this big. You don't have to plug it in. I don't have to worry about power. Okay, you can plug it in. Less hassle. So with these devices, I can connect it through USB. I think everybody knows what USB cords are. Automatically zip it right over to my computer. Some of these devices allow Bluetooth transfer. I don't even need a wire to transfer them. Very simple transfer to your computer. Less time. Now, this is important. If you have a good quality two-track recorder, then you have skipped the entire multi-microphone, multi-mixer mix-down process, which will take hours and hours and hours on end. None of us have that kind of time. If you have access to a sound engineer, take advantage of it. But what we're talking about here today are good quality two-track recordings that if you wanted to, you can definitely burn CDs, send them to Harry Fox. You caught the last thing. License them to distribute. Okay? And the mixdown process is virtually eliminated because we're kind of going right to the last process, which is known as the mastering process with this. So to sum it up here, today's high-quality two-track recording devices coupled with quality digital editing software greatly reduces the time and hassle involved in producing high-quality recordings of ensemble groups. Yes, I do run-on sentences and all kind of other fun stuff. Okay. So to sum it up, great gear, a little bit of knowledge, great product. Result. Okay. All right, so why did I choose Audacity and not any of the other 10,000 varieties? Well, first let me say I am a big fan of good quality commercial software. The reason that I chose Audacity for this presentation and also when I talk to K-12 schools is because it's free. This is free and it's a high quality software. Okay. And it's a great place to start. If later on you have an advanced class and you want to get into Pro Tools or you want to get into Adobe Audition or whatever you use, great. But this is a great piece of software. Multilingual support. It's free. It has hundreds of people in the community that continue to develop it because it's open source, which means it's a community that controls it. There are updates all the time for this. And if you have a problem, post it. Usually will be fixed in the next release. It supports plugins. Now, for some of you, the concept of plugins is a little bit foreign, but you can kind of think as of plugins as I get a product and then I can add a whole lot more to it later on. An example of a plugin could be an advanced equalizing device or, to much of the disdain to vocal teachers everywhere, a pitch corrector. Okay? yes, you can get those as plugins. Don't you wish you could plug them into the people sometimes? It's easy to use. That being said, it's not the easiest to use. And I do want to caveat that because Audacity sometimes, when you get into it, it's not as easy. It is intuitive, but not as intuitive of some of the shareware / commercial programs out there. Again, concepts learned in Audacity easily transfer to any other audio editing software. Once you understand the basics of audio editing, it's easily transferred. It's just kind of the matter of what buttons do I press or what's that called. The concepts remain the same. And again, it's free. Okay. All right, so before we start this, I wanted to have a little bit of background. Some background things that you need to think about as we get into that. And I don't say I'm going to school this, but I learned this a long time ago when I was taking computer classes. Okay, maybe some of you remember this. Garbage in, garbage out. That is that a recording can only be as good as the group being recorded. This is especially true in the two-track world. Why is it especially true in the two-track world? Because I can't take that alto saxophone that was awful for whatever reason and eliminate them and have them re-record. You get what you hear in the two-track. And that's also the beauty of a two-track because ensembles and or groups that are rehearsed really well will make great two-track recordings. And that's the key. I always tell my students because they're always trying to record. From there, okay, once we establish a good ensemble, a good mix, who decides if the mix is good? You decide if the mix is good. There's no magic to this. Does it sound bad to you? It probably is bad. Does it sound good to you? It probably is good. As long as you have a good reference point to base good from. Okay. From there, we need good microphones, good mic placement, good connections, blah, blah, blah. And then there's the whole fidelity issue that we'll talk about a little bit later. So with this presentation, I have a couple of assumptions that we need to start out with. The first assumption is that you're using a high-quality two-track recorder device and not your 1985 Walkman that records on cassettes. Okay? So you're using, to start up, a good quality device. Another assumption, and this is good to know. There's some good information here. You need to properly place the device. A lot of people don't know where is proper placement for a two-track recording. Well, here's some guidelines for you, okay? Generally, 6 to 20 feet away from the front, center, anywhere from 7 to 15 foot high. Sometimes you'll see these recorder guys come in, and the mic is 60 feet in the air, and they're putting it up there because they bought that mic stand. Okay, so again, the closer we get to the ensemble, the less reverberant the sound. The further away we get from the ensemble, the more reverb-y the sound is. What is the sweet spot? I don't know. I haven't been in your auditorium. This is a good general. Put it down. Hit record. Record. Listen to it. No, I don't like that. Move it over here 5 feet. Record it. Don't like it. Move it over here. Oh, that's a great spot. Remember that spot. Okay? So trial and error as we go through this. Okay, two more assumptions. You've set your recorder to a high-quality, lossless recording. What in the world does that mean? That means that you're basically not recording as any type of MP3. One of the reasons that you have to think of... Now, if you're just doing rehearsal, if you're just doing something that ultimately is going to only end up on the web anyways, or you want to email to your students, MP3 qualities can be very fine. But you want to start with a high quality so that you can make lesser qualities later. If you start with a low quality, guess what? You can't make it better. It's always going to be at that point. Okay? So we're going to just take a couple minutes here and we're going to discuss this. When we get into quality recordings, I have up here MP3, Wave, whoa, all this stuff. Okay? You start talking about sampling and bit rate. I've already said this. Never set, I have a pointer, I can use that. Never set your device to record an ensemble as an MP3 file. MP3 quality is a lossy format. I should say never if we're going to record something that's going to be distributed professionally or semi-professionally or go out to people from there. Now, the question becomes, well, should I record at 44.1 16-bit? What is this stuff for some of you that don't know? Well, if you ever listen to a CD, and I'm just going to take a chance and assume that you've all heard a CD professionally, okay? This is the rate that CDs are recorded at. We call this the Red Book CD standard. Okay. So, should I record at this? Because now we have even higher quality rates that we can record at. And I'm going to just kind of skip ahead one on here and make the case for us to start out with recording at CD quality as opposed to a higher quality, which we'll talk about later on. If we record at this particular sampling rate, this is a lossless format as opposed to the MP3. All the data is there. We're not really missing anything from it. When we compare it to a high and much better in the terms of digitally, most people, unless you have really good gear and you listen, it's fairly difficult for the average person to hear the difference between a CD quality and a higher quality recording. You'll be able to put more on your recording card, 3 times as much more, as a matter of fact. Second, if you want to make CDs anyways, you have to convert to this format later on. There's a problem on many computers with going from this bit rate, which is unarguably a higher quality, back down to this bit rate. And the problem comes with down converting. In mathematics, 96 doesn't necessarily go into 44.1 doesn't go into 96 very evenly. This will cause your computer to spend a lot of time crunching numbers. And depending upon how good your audio filters are, your audio gear, you may get artifacts that you don't want in that recording. You may not. There's plenty of recording software and hardware that makes this okay. For CD quality is not as bad as all the 96 24-bit people say it is. It's not. We've been using it for over 25 years. It was the recording standard. This is a high-quality format. So my suggestion is to start out with, let's just set it at 44.1, 16-bit. Let's get an idea of what that sounds like so that when we do later on upgrade, which is a matter of hitting a button on these devices, we can see if we can hear the difference. And when we convert it down, we can see if there is a difference. So start with this. So here it is. Here's my secret formula for editing in Audacity, or any other editor for that matter, once we get it from the device into the computer. And there are 9 steps. And I'm just going to list them, and then we'll kind of go through them briefly. Okay, first thing we do is a cut edit. Then DC offset. Whoa, what is that? We'll talk about that. You may not need it. Then we equalize. I think a lot of us understand the concept of equalization. Then we kind of compress it. Then we might equalize it again. We add reverb. I like to consider, I like to call reverb the mayonnaise of sound editing. It just brings everything together. Yeah. Then we normalize it. We add fade ins and fade out. And then ultimately we save it, burn it, or convert it to something else. Okay? So these are the 9 steps. If you follow these and get slightly good at using these 9 steps, you're going to have really good quality audio because you started with good quality audio in the recording, and your ensembles are amazing. So we're going right down the chain here. Okay, so this is the formula, 1 through 9. Oh, and let me just rewind here real quick before I go back here. You will see between items 3 and 6, there are many of audio engineers that will put these in all kind of orders, just so you know. This is the order I typically do for 90%. There are good reasons to do this order, but sometimes there are good reasons to move it out of order. So you will see a lot of discussion about that, and I wanted to put that in there because when you say, oh, Joe Pisano said this is the way to do it, and you talk to your audio engineer of 40 years who's really good, does it a slightly different way, that's okay. They probably have a good reason that they're doing that. Okay, so a cut edit is a top and tail edit. This started recording 7 minutes before the presentation officially started. So what I like to call a cut edit is, let's get rid of all the information in front of what we want and all the information behind what we want, and let's just get rid of it. Because if we get rid of it, we don't have to have it in there screwing up all of our calculations and our effects later on. So if I blow this up for you here, here's an example of an audio file in Audacity. This is the information I want, and then this is kind of extraneous information, and this is extraneous information, so I'm going to cut here, and I'm going to cut here. Now I have framed the piece of audio that I want to work with. So this is called a top and tail cut. Now see step number one, very easy. We do a cut, we get to the material that we want. Now, DC offset. Now, I'm only bringing this up because there'll be 1 out of 1,000 of you that run into this, and you'll be like, I didn't talk about it. What DC offset is, if you look down here, it's a little bit easier to picture this. Sometimes when you record, in particular when something is plugged in, the reference of zero gets slightly skewed. So if you look at this, this is an example of a sound here, you can see that it's slightly above zero. Okay? What you want to do is move it back down so that it is centered. This is called the DC offset. The reason, if you look at your audio and it looks like this, the reason that you want to do this is so that later on, when you start to edit this, it's probably not going to sound any different, ladies and gentlemen. The problem is later on, when I want to expand it, or I want to add, or I want to amplify it, it's going to be unamplified, it's going to be amplified more on one side than another. You'll have potential for this to clip on this side before this side clips. What is clipping? Clipping is when you get your audio loud enough that all these, this is a representation of sound, that all of, or not all of it, parts of the sound wave are above a digital zero. That sounds like this. It sounds awful. Okay? So you want to move this down to zero. Very easy in Audacity. You simply choose the normalize effect and click on this, remove any DC offset, click OK, it's done. Okay, very simple. Wanted to throw that in there so that you would be aware of it. Now, equalization. Equalization. How many in here are familiar with the concept of equalization? Okay. Most of you, but believe it or not, you actually all are familiar with this. If you've ever been in your car and you turn up the volume, it takes all the frequencies, all the pitches, and turns them all up. And when I turn it down, it turns all the pitches and turns them down, less loudness. If I turn up the treble, I take the high pitches and turn them up. If I turn down the bass, I take the low pitches or the low information and I reduce them. So equalization is the process of editing individual frequencies within the entire sound spectrum. It's fairly easy to do, and understanding equalization and just even getting in there and messing around with it will produce spectacular success or spectacular mess. As you go through this, you can make something very boomy. You can take somebody that's fairly nasally sounding, increase a little bit of their low frequencies, take just a little bit off of maybe the mid upper range, and all of a sudden they don't sound so nasally anymore. Someone that has no bass in their voice might be able to just eke up their bass just a little bit, and all of a sudden there's much more presence to the sound. Equalization is how we accomplish this. Now, do you see why I have this 17-page handout? Right? So, you know, a lot of times you might present something like this in a workshop, but I think it's kind of nice to, a lot of people are afraid of workshops. So we get in here, we talk about it this way, and you realize, oh, okay, well, this kind of makes sense, and then you won't be afraid to try it later on. Okay? So here's a brief primer. As we talk about music from an audio engineer's perspective. Audio engineers typically aren't going to talk about, C4 or A4 or A3 or pitches per se. they talk about things in frequencies. And we all know this as musicians. A440 is what we usually tune to, usually. Because if your piano's flat, you're probably going to tune a little bit flatter as you go. So A440 is actually the amount of cycles per second that makes the sound of an A. Okay? When we look at that. So the higher the frequency, the higher the pitch. The lower the frequency, the lower the pitch. Now, human beings can hear from 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz. This is called the range of human hearing. As you get beyond 30, that upper range just starts going away. My wife tells me that I'm not listening to her, and I keep telling her. I did an entire dissertation that told me that musicians can't hear females' voices. It's just right there. You know, we lose that. So I have hard evidence about that. She doesn't believe it. So. Okay. So a little bit more with EQ, because I think, you know, we're here to learn about technology. We can you know, stretch our minds a little bit and discuss this at a slightly higher level. So when we look at equalization, well, how are octaves related when we talk about numbers? Very mathematical. It's a factor of two. So 100 hertz is an octave lower than 200 hertz. Okay? 400 hertz is an octave higher than 200 hertz. 800 hertz is an octave higher than 400. So you see the relation. Okay? As I double the frequencies, we get to the next octave. So when you're dealing with equalization, that's kind of important to know. Okay, where do the octaves fall? Okay? A perfect fifth is exactly halfway between an octave. So whatever the octave is, divided in half, there's where your perfect fifth is. Musicians get this. You talk to audio engineers, they're like, yeah, okay. All right, so let's take a look at this in a different way. A low A on the piano is 27.5 hertz, almost at the bottom end of the hearing frequency. So we're pounding out on that. It's not a great note. A little bit flubby. Okay. Middle C is approximately 262 hertz. High C, C8 on a piano, is 4,000 hertz. Now, we can hear all the way up to 20,000. So why does this high C sound like a toy piano? It drives people nuts. Because you're actually getting pretty high up there. And what materials are above 4,000? Usually the harmonics. Or in music, we talk about the overtones. And it's the overtones that really define timbre. Why does a piano sound like a piano? Why does a clarinet sound like a clarinet? It's this harmonic or overtone relationship. Okay, so quick guide to finding pitches. If I say the O sound or O, it's kind of low. If I say a little bit higher, okay? If I say even a little bit higher, or even higher, even higher, and even higher than that. So here's a little guide. Okay, well, where's the pitch at? Okay, even more importantly, we go down to, let me bring this up real quick. Here is a piano in octaves. Okay, so this is that A0 we were talking about. Middle C is here, A440 is here, and then we get up to here. Okay, so let's talk about this as it relates to back to making good recordings. I tend to divide songs and music into five categories, and these are the categories up here. Okay, the low bass, 20 hertz to 100 hertz. This area, music is more felt, actually much more felt, than it is heard. And many speakers don't actually go down this low. Okay, so you might be listening to something, and you're, man, I'm really cranking this up, and I don't hear any difference. Well, guess what? Your speakers can't replicate it. Okay, so adjustment here does a lot of to this feeling, and it gives a little kick into the kick bass, or if the kick bass is a little too kicky, you can take it out. So we can equalize some of that here. The mid-bass range, 100 hertz to 400 hertz. Most of the low instruments, the big instruments, the tuba, the contra, the big instruments, the fundamental notes fall into this range. And this is what we typically think of when we turn up the bass in the car, is this range. So if I overemphasize this area, then it can get very muddy, it can sound very muddy. If there isn't enough emphasis in this area, there's no floor. If you ever listen to music and you're like, where's the bass? That's because it's missing this whole range right here. Okay? So through equalization and audacity, we can kind of pump this back up. The mid-range. Now, the mid-range is fairly large. This is the area where almost all of the fundamentals exist, not only for voice, but most of the music family. So minor adjustments of equalization in this area will have dramatic effect on the overall sound. And you might think, well, I'm going to turn that trumpet player down a little bit, and I turn them down, and it also turns down the clarinet. Well, they happen to be in the same range. We can't fix that using a two-track recording method. Okay? The low upper range. Very few fundamental notes up there. A lot of harmonics are up there that start mainly the keyboard instruments. If you're dealing with voices or even speaking, if you increase this range, usually you will increase the overall clarity of the sound or give it a brightness to the music. We get into the upper range here. This is really high. Some cibilants are up here. All the sibilant sounds are here. Up there, they're very high. So if you have a lot of, man, these T sounds are driving me crazy, then this is the area to reduce up here. And if there's not a lot of it, maybe you want to increase this area in equalization. So my advice with this is to tread lightly when we add equalization. And a 3 decibel change, one way or another, will greatly affect the overall sound. I'm going to show you a picture in a minute of how that works on Audacity. And here's some common, and this is a 2-octave vocal range. So the bass from E2 to E4, 82 to 330 hertz. The tenor from C3 to C5, 131 to 523, and so forth. Okay. Here is a picture of Audacity. So in here, you have volume levels, okay, to change, add, or subtract individual frequencies. So all I do is I slide these levers, and whatever number they're underneath, it will correspondingly either add or subtract. And this is an effect that we choose in Audacity. And you simply start messing around. You may not need to add EQ at all, ladies and gentlemen, but you may want to. And if you sometimes just adding a little bit here and there will greatly enhance your recording. A lot of times people will just take a lever and just floor it. And then all of a sudden we get into some clipping issues and it just sounds muddy and awful. So this is it's a good place to start. Start with 3 decibel increments or less and then just listen to it. Okay. Click it too fast here. Compression. Compression is the process of taking an overall volume and reducing it. So compression is taking overall volume and reducing it. It's not necessarily de-amplifying it because compression allows us to specify what particular elements of the song are too loud, and once it gets to a threshold, anything above it, we can kind of reel back in. Okay, we can reel this back in through compression. Now, before I get into this with a lot of words, I'm just going to show you here. Okay, here is an example of a sound file, and right here, 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 and here are cymbal crashes that actually are quite annoying, to be honest with you. So what I can do through using compression is I can just simply reduce those peaks. So I'm going to go to the effect, and I'm going to choose the compressor, and I'm going to pick a setting on here. Now, the threshold, I'll just explain these very briefly, and I know I'm going to run out of time for this session. The threshold is at what point, okay, do we start to reduce the overall sound? And the ratio is the next most important. How much do we want to reduce it? So let me just apply this and let's see what happens. And hopefully my computer won't crash. So let's see. I should have selected a little smaller area on there. Did you see it? You're gone. Okay. Notice, now I'm going to undo it. They're back. I'm going to redo it. They're gone. Notice it did not affect any of the other audio. Did you see that? Undo, redo. Okay. Compression allows you to pick what you want to make a little bit smaller. And the truth is, compression is a tool that maybe I wanted to add a little bit more and actually compress some of this other little bit. If you ever listen to a tape, a cassette, it's automatically compressed. It's the nature of a tape. Sometimes, I'm going to go on record and say most times, a little compression will make the entire song sound a little bit better. Now, how can I make that statement? Because I've listened to compression so many times. So you do want to add a little bit of light compression. Now, if you look at some of my settings on here, I give you some examples of what to try on here. Okay, let me just fast forward to one on here. These are a good place to start, okay? Good place to start. And I explain what basically each one of these do, and the purpose of compression is to try and reduce those peaks and just make your dynamic level a little bit smarter, a little bit smaller. By doing that, the overall sound tends to be more cohesive. Okay? So this is a step-by-step way of how to do this in Audacity. Okay? Now, let me just fast forward to this so you can see the compressor setting on here again. Okay? So we have the threshold, that is, at what level of sound do we start affecting it? And what do we want to bring it down? Because if I choose minus 36 down here, it's going to compress the whole thing. Okay, so this is kind of the first indicator on here. The noise floor, basically, just leave that at minus 40. This is the material that you're saying, okay, the noise floor is down here, don't go down there. Minus 40 is a good place to start. The ratio, so this is where it gets a little bit confusing. Here's how the ratio works, and a lot of people that have used compressors still don't understand this. The ratio works like this. If I set a line, a threshold, and there's 10 decibels that go over that threshold, a 2-to-1 setting will take every 2 decibels and reduce it down to 1. So it'll reduce the setting by 5 decibels. A 4-to-1 ratio will take, for every 4 decibels over this threshold, I'm going to reduce those 4 down to 1. So the bigger the ratio, the more drastic the compression is. I'm going to move forward in the essence of time. You can read this a little bit in the handouts. That's why I have the handouts for you. Now, reverb. Hopefully everyone knows what reverb is in here. And it can be a great tool. If you happen to be recording in a small room like this with an ensemble, it's actually not a bad sounding room, to tell you the truth, even though there's a carpet in here. You might want to make it sound like they were in a smaller hall or even a larger hall. You might want to get a chamber effect. The reverb effect allows us to do that. Okay? Now, in Audacity, this is the one thing that drives me crazy in Audacity. I have to tell you, it's probably the most least intuitive of all of the effects. That being said, I have links on here to find much easier reverb effects where you can just say large hall, smaller hall, or that type of thing. In Audacity, you have to deal with this screen. Okay? And this screen is, okay, well, how big is your room? How much reverb time do you want? What's the damn thing? Input. Now, what this plugin basically allows you to adjust the reverb. And what it is an audio engineer gone wow. And they're like, we're going to give these Audacity people every possible, 10,000 ways to add reverb. So what I did for you is I went ahead and I said, okay, you want to try some with that built-in plugin? Put these in. This will add different levels of reverb for you. Give it a try. See if you like it. All right, now the normalize function. This is almost always the last step in audio editing, or it's close to the last step in audio editing. What normalization does, and I'm just going to show it to you because it's easier for me to show it to you. If you look here, you can see that, okay, it's kind of if we go up and down on this axis, this is the volume, okay? If I am done with all my editing, what I can do is choose normalize to expand the audio so that it is as maximized as it could be. That way, when you play it in the CD, you don't, or you're an MP3 or whatever, you might have to turn it up too much to hear it. You've ever experienced this, especially homemade CDs, right? One song is just crazy loud, and the next song you can't hear it, so you're playing this game. Normalization allows us to effectively make everything have the highest volume level, right? So you can still have quiet sections, but it brings the highest volume levels to the same. So I'm just going to do this for you so you can see this. I'm going to choose this normalize effect. I'm going to go edit and normalize. Okay. Now, again, now we don't have to do this DC offset anymore. We're just going to normalize this, and let's see what happens. Okay, so it has now expanded everything to a consistent level, which is 1 dB. Now, I've explained in there a little bit about what you should choose. I usually choose 1 dB or 3. Because sometimes if I normalize something on one processor and I play it back on something else, you may get clipping. Depends upon the audio. So I don't typically normalize to 0, which is the maximum amount an audio file can be before clipping noise goes in. So if I was to record other music and then normalize them, they will all have the same maximum sound volume levels. It gives us a consistency and literally will make your music sound more full and more spatial when you listen to it. So definitely an effect that you do not want to skip, or a process that you do not want to skip. All right, so fade in, fade out, and silence. This is self-explanatory. It's very easy to do, and I'll show this to you. You may want to add a fade in. You may want to add a fade out. It's very common for ensemble directors to include maybe 3 seconds of applause and just kind of fade it out because, oh, look, people came to our concert and they liked it. You know, it's a good thing for us. So we might want to have it in there. You may want to have a fade in, or maybe your choir didn't give you the dynamic that you really wanted. You can use the fade. You can also use the amplify process to do that. So you can do some of this editing in Audacity. Let me show you how simple it is to do a fade. Let's say I wanted to fade this entire section right here. For whatever reason, I would never do this, but just for an example, I wanted to fade this in. I go up to Effect, and I choose Fade In. There it is. So it will, depending upon what is selected, it will just take whatever time amount you selected and create a linear fade. The fade out works exactly the same way. Select what you want, fade in, boom, it's done. Select what you want, fade out, and it's done. Okay? Let's go back to you. Okay, the silence part of this. I typically will add either a half second before the song starts and a half second after it. And when you make a CD, sometimes it'll put a 2 second thing in there anyways. I almost always frame all of my pieces with at least a half second of nothing before it starts and a half second of nothing after. It's very easy to do in Audacity. You simply move the cursor where you want it, which is at the beginning of the piece, and you move it to the end of the piece, and you put generate silence. You'll get an option of how much time do you want to put in. Click the button, and you have instant silence. Now, what do we do now? We have this incredible master that we've worked on. Well, we need to save it. And here's the thing. You want to make sure that you save this master and call it the master file. Because later on, after you've made 128-bit MP3s and 64-bit and 54, you might still want to go back to this great quality. So make sure that you name this as your master. Because later on, we can export this to any kind of quality of MP3. So have your master labeled as such and keep it there so that you can go back and later on make lesser quality audio files that still don't sound all that bad. Most people know how to burn CDs by now. If you don't have a product that allows you to burn CDs, here are two that I recommend that are open source and free. You can get these, one for the Mac, one for the PC. Great software, it'll burn great CDs for you. Okay? And then if you wanted to convert to MP3 like I talked, choose the export function and just say, okay, I want to make an MP3. It'll ask you what quality, hit the button, and now you have an MP3 of that. So it's very easy to down convert, in particular to MP3s with Audacity. All right, so a final wrap up in here. Who decides what sounds good? You decide what sounds good. When I work with teachers and students, I really have to drill that into them. You guys, as musicians, have listened to music your entire life. You are qualified to make that decision. If you don't like it, change it. Try something else. Okay? I talked about the A-B method, which in Audacity is the undo, do, redo method. So I make a change, listen to it. I don't even remember what it sounded like before it. Undo, listen to it. Redo, listen to it. This has worked great since the first time the first sound engineer ever discovered it. It's still done every time by every person that deals with sound. Undo, redo. Listen to your change. Did it improve it? Make that judgment. Did what I do improve it? And if I add a little bit more, does it improve it even more? Does it actually wreck it? We go back to equalization. A little equalization goes a long way to affecting the overall sound of the piece. Now, it goes without saying, but I am going to say this anyways. Never edit anything without high quality monitors, or at least, which is probably the case of all of us here, high quality headphones. Okay? The average big deal $75 Best Buy Kmart special multimedia speakers, you do not want to edit with these things. Okay? They have deficiencies. What does a good reference monitor cost? Between $1,000 and $4,000, even more, $15,000. Okay, we don't have that kind of money. But what we can do is we can buy a pretty good pair of studio-grade broadcast engineer headphones for around $100 and edit with these, because you will hear in these headphones what the music should sound like. If it sounds good in a good pair of headphones, it's still going to sound good on everything else. Consequently, if we vice versa that, if it sounds great on your $25 subwoofer special at Walmart, and you play it back on something else, it may sound awful. So you want to edit with good quality headphones. Spend the $100 to do that. And I put on here, take a look, if you're looking, okay, so great, it said use high quality headphones. What does that mean? Take a look at the Sony MDR-7506. You can find them sometimes for $80, $89. They can be upwards to $130. These are kind of an industry standard called middle of the road, but still a good grade to mix with type of headphones. Something else, give your ears a 5 to 10 minute rest every hour. Your ears will become fatigued, and you will start to listen, and you'll listen, and you'll listen. It's like, well, does that sound right? I don't know. I've been listening for 50 minutes, and I'm fatigued. Take a break. Go back to it. Listen to it again. It may sound completely different, and what you thought was done might not really have been your final edit. And that's very important. Take a break when you edit. Don't just edit for an hour or two. So how long does this process take? You said this was a cookie-cutter solution. It is. Follow the 9 steps. How long should it take you? Well, if you get really good at this, you might be able to zip through it in 30 minutes or an hour. You may end up spending 5 to 6 hours. It depends how finicky you are with this stuff. But the process still applies, whether you spend 30 minutes, you spend an hour, or you spend 5 hours doing this. The process still applies. All right, now I've been pushing so I can actually make it to this slide. One thing I do want to say is that this entire presentation and the audio from this device, and please feel free to come up after and check out this handheld device up here, it really is quite amazing, will be available on my website. The PowerPoint itself, I use authorstream.com, and I have that in there somewhere. Authorstream.com, you can just type in my name, and you can see all of my PowerPoints and watch them online. In addition, the podcast of this will be up at musetech.net, musetech.podomatic.com. This will be on iTunes as well. So if you punch in Joseph Pisano on iTunes, you usually find my podcast up there. Okay. My website is musetech.net. The handout itself will be on musetech.net. There will be kind of a wrap-up that will point you to all of these other links. So if you go to musetech.net, probably mid-next week, you'll have all this information on there. One of the things I like to do with musetech.net, for those of you that haven't been there, is I'd like to kind of take all of the things going on in education, not just in the United States, but worldwide, and see how can we implement things in music? How can we make things better? How can we have a conversation about this very thing on the web? And we can start a discussion on MuseTech. As a matter of fact, there are many discussions started on MuseTech.net about this. In addition, I have a link on there that shows you 17 completely free to use open source or freeware softwares that you can use tomorrow in your classes. Something from ear training, such as solfege.org, to theory training, to free music composition software, MuseScore music notation, MuseScore.org. Unbelievable, completely free notation software. So on my site, and I'm putting a little bit of a kick in for it, but it's worthwhile to know about this site, because there's just a tremendous amount of information on there. One more thing, I'm on Twitter. I've been tweeting a lot of the conference, and so has Amy. And if you are on Twitter, if you look up me, we're using a hashtag. And if you don't know what that is, go to twitter.com/PisanoJM and you can see it. A lot of people here at this conference right now, you can see what's going on. They're Twittering about what's happening here, so you can check that out. Sure, question.
Just wanted to mention, we're talking about free software. Richie Adams, musictheory.net.
Oh, what a
just upgraded it. There's a beta, so this guy's still improving what he's doing.
And
check it out.
And the beautiful thing about his site is, if you don't have an internet connection, you can download his entire site onto your computer. And you can use that in class. You don't have to have an internet connect. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal site.
What's it called again?
It's R-I-C-C-I.
Just music theory.
Musictheory.net. That's correct.
One word, music theory.
Yeah, a great site. So, I know there's going to be some specific questions, so please come up, talk to me. I'm going to be here for the next couple days. If you see me, please bother me. It's my pleasure to be here, and hopefully we'll stay in touch.
We want to thank Dr. Joe Pisano. I would love to hear your feedback, because I know it's going to be great. So please fill those out. If you didn't get a...